Post race coverage of the Indianapolis 500 is brought to you by Bill Estes. Get up to $4,000 more for your trade at Bill Estes. 8 brands, 4 locations. Open Memorial Day.
Welcome to High Atop the 4th Floor Media Center here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The 101st run of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. It's come to its conclusion about 20 or so minutes ago. And for the first time, a Japanese-born driver has won the Indianapolis 500. It is Takuma Sato. He is taking a victory lap around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, proudly displaying the Japanese flag as we speak. It is a fifth different race victory and fifth different race winner for a driver representing Andretti Autosport. Again, five different winners, Dan Weldon in 2005, Dario Franchitti in 2007, 2014, Ryan Hunter-Reay, and last year, in 2016, Alexander Rossi. We will hear from Takuma Sato. We'll also catch you up on press conferences for our second and third place finishers in this year's race as well. Kevin Lee will be joining me, as will the historian of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in Donald Davidson. We'll take this quick timeout. When we come back, we'll hear the post-race press conference of three-time winner Elio Castroneves. That comes your way next as post-race coverage continues on 107.5, 1070 The Fan, and 93 WIBC. Back atop the 4th Floor Media Center here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, post-race press conferences are continuing. Let's carry some of those now. At the podium currently, the runner-up in Elio Castroneves and the top-placing rookie, third-place finisher Ed Jones.
I have to say that he did a very good job. When we ran side-by-side, he was very smart. I have to say that you drove not like a rookie, to be honest. So congrats. You did a good job.
Elio, what did you see of the flying car? Because when it did, I mean, pretty much you drove
flying
right under it.
I saw they were flying. And I duck. I close my eyes. And when I open, I was in the grass. And I was like, hold on, you know. And no, I knew, I saw the 77 on the gray, and I knew he would bounce back. That for sure, because it happened a long time ago, 2011, I think, and that almost caught me. So I knew that would be a thing. When I saw Dixon, I said, okay, he might be getting in trouble. And so I was already moving to the left, but the car, when it collect, both, they came in a pace so fast towards me in the air that I really throw the car into the inside, and all of a sudden I just saw the grass. I mean, I was in the grass. Actually, there was a hump. I don't know what happened. The car just jumped, and I'm kind of like kind of hold on, you know. And I thought, okay, look around, everything's fine. And when we stopped because of the red flag, we noticed that there was the wing lead broken and the front wing was broken too. I did not. Like I said, I don't know how he broke the wing lat, because if some parts touched my car, it was really close. I saw really the car in the air.
Elio, over here. Last 5 or 10 laps, how much did that feel like 2014, and why or why not?
No, it was different. 2014, we had something more. He did a 221.5 his last lap. By myself, I was doing 220.0. So they were a mile and a half faster than us. And 2014, probably a half mile an hour. So, or maybe 0.7. So for me, you can see that was really, really strong, special when you pass, they back off, lift off. When they come back again, they come back really strong. So I was actually, when I went past, I think 3 laps to go on the outside, I knew I would make it. But when as soon as I start turning, the car start pushing, and I'm like, ooh, this is going to be a problem. And then I thought that would create momentum for us. But unfortunately, not even that. I wasn't even able to get that. So, really shame. Really disappointed for that.
Is it heartbreaking to come this close again to your
fourth? Yes, it's tough to accept. After so many things happen, that's at least give you the perspective that I did my best. I really pushed it. The guys did a phenomenal job. And we drove our heart, no question. And the good news sounds like we're leading the championship. So, hey, there is always a positive note, and I think that it is very positive. Yes, finish second again sucks. So close to get to the fourth. I'm really trying. I will not give up this dream, and I know it's going to happen.
Ed, compare 2016's Freedom 100 to today. You've done a great job going second last year, third this year. How have you taken to the Speedway, especially with the battle you had there with Elio?
Yeah, I've loved ovals since I started racing them. You know, last year I think we finished on the podium in all three of them, Indy Lights. And coming here, you know, a big part of it is having a good car underneath you, and I was fortunate to have that today. Like you said, you know, I've had good battles around here. In the lights car, where you can run side by side for a lot of it. So when I was running next to Helio, it was kind of a bit of deja vu, but you know, it was good. It's so frustrating again. I think I've had five top threes on ovals now, and I haven't won one. So it's really gutting not to get one, and I'm working my hardest to do it next time.
Helio, talk a little bit about, one, the first pass you made. I think you got him in three there late in the race, and then came back around and you were going after him again. But I don't think that was in the third turn. I think that was in one. Can you talk about the difference and maybe why you didn't wait for three again?
It just didn't. I think, the car. Man, I made so many passes that now I'm kind of like confusing. I passed Takuma Sato on outside turn three to the lead for the lead. No, that was eight, wasn't it, Chilton? I think it was Chilton. Yeah, that's why the car was blue. But the thing is, with Chilton, I was pretty decent, but the Andretti guys, they were really strong. And if I did make a pass, probably because Chilton was in front and it was actually helping me to get a little bit of a draft. And that why I made the pass, but I couldn't. My turn two was really good. Exit back straight, it was really good, but unfortunately, I was not able to do it. Trust me, yeah, I was really trying.
All right, let's jump in here. We'll try to bring you more of the conversations involving Helio Castroneves and Ed Jones if times allow. But right now, let's update on the latest track. Let's go back to the WIBC. Welcome back to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I will kind of, in the old days of the Indianapolis 500, when there were replacement drivers or co-pilots, I will gladly now take that status for the remainder of our program, because the man that was on the IndyCar Radio Network for today's broadcast, of course, hosted Trackside and Talk of Gasoline Alley for the entirety of the month of May. And in case you had not heard, be the lead anchor for a large chunk of the NBC Sports Network IndyCar telecasts for the remainder of the season. Congratulations to my friend and Kevin Lee. How many years now as part of the Indy 500 broadcast is this for you?
17 on the air. And by the way, you're not handing over the reins. I am fine riding shotgun the rest of the way, so I will follow your lead. But 17th year on the air, and then I did probably three as a spotter for Bob Lamy. Yeah. In turn four. So it's, you know, I've had the opportunity, been fortunate to do a lot of things, broadcast the Super Bowl from the sidelines, the NBA Finals, work on network television, but nothing's bigger than the Indianapolis 500.
Every race is unique. What's going to make this one special?
I'm going to have to digest this one for a while, and I always go back and watch the races again when I get home, and I look forward to that on Sunday night on Channel 6 locally. Because so much happened that I'm going to need to see again. You know, for example, I haven't even seen all of the horrific, frightening Scott Dixon crash. I haven't seen a couple of the others. But you had so many different. It played out the way we thought it would. You had so many that had a legitimate chance to win the race if the brakes would have fallen their way. I came in saying I started the calendar year, saying, I think Honda is going to be better than Chevy, and if that's the case, I'm going to take the best driver they have, and maybe the best driver of this generation, Scott Dixon. The only guys that have won more races than Scott Dixon are named Foyt, Andretti, and Andretti. And he might have won the thing if he hadn't been involved with that. And I said, if I have to pick a second one, it's going to be Ryan Hunter-Reay.
And if the engine doesn't blow, it looks like he might get there. So that was a storyline that played out. Would the Hondas make it? Honda was definitely better, but we still thought Chevy might have something for them. They came close, but as Elio Castroneves was just saying, he didn't really have that much of a chance, especially against one of the Andretti's, because they just were missing a little bit of oomph.
Let's give people a little inside baseball here. Four different pit reporters on the IndyCar Radio Network. What different pit stalls were you in today?
I was, I started at Takuma Sato's pit. So I basically went from Gasoline Alley to the start-finish line. So I had what we would call the second section. So I had Fernando Alonso's pit. I had Marco Andretti's pit. I had Max Chilton's pit. So I ended up with a lot of players. The section, I'll have to grab my grid, but the section, you know, it's normally pit out. Pit selection is based on qualifying. It's not based on points or anything else. It's just straight up qualifying. So you've got fast guys up at the front, and that's where Michael Young was. And, you know, we assumed that, well, that's where all the stories are going to be. However, they first had all the Penske's back in the third section, so we thought that might be a player as well. But it worked out that there were just a lot of stories spread throughout pit lane for our broadcast purposes. But you had so many chances. Who would have thunk at the end of the race we're talking about who's going to win between James Davison, Ed Jones, Max Chilton, and Takuma Sato? Now, Sato would be the one that's really, it's not a huge upset that Sato won the race.
Right.
I said that in the little piece I did at the beginning of the race, that don't count out him. We know if he's got a good car, and this is the best car in Indianapolis he's ever had. We've seen what the Andretti's have had. We know he's trying to go to the front. He is fearless, and if something doesn't go wrong, then he's going to have a chance to win. And ultimately, it played out that way. I'm most amazed, and credit to them, that Max Chilton and Ed Jones, I think Ed Jones is the story of being able to get there, and that's, again, why I'm going to need to watch it again. How did Ed Jones get up to the front? I'm sure it was the timing of pit stops, and he cycled through. And then so many yellows helped people like Ed Jones and James Davison and Max Chilton get back on the similar strategy. And I'm glad we had a race to the finish. You know, I know fuel strategy is always part of it, but I like to see an outright race to the finish, and we had that.
Given the weather forecast, I'm glad we got 200 laps in an uninterrupted fashion. Our only delay was for a rather terrifying crash that ultimately had,
so you're going to show me that now here,
an absolutely great result in terms of there might be a bit of a left foot issue. He was wearing a walking boot as he was driving a golf cart after going to the infield care center, but again, two remarkably scary incidents with Sebastian Bourdais last Saturday, Scott Dixon this Sunday. Obviously, Sebastian's going to miss a large chunk of this season, what might have been, what he could have done in that 18 car, given what James Davison did today. But the fact that Scott was able to talk to reporters a few minutes after that crash, given how scary it was, is to me absolutely remarkable.
The way I've had it described to me is that he launched.
He did.
Similar to what we had in Las Vegas. Maybe not the exact same circumstances, but that he got 20, 30 feet in the air. So beyond the scary nature of this, I guess it's simply just a testament to the safety and the progress that has been made that Scott Dixon and Sebastian Bourdais can walk away from. I mean, these have to be top 10 in the realm of frightening crashes at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and Bourdais banged up, and it's gonna keep him out for a while. But Scott, we think, is okay.
Yeah.
You know, I heard he was in a walking boot, so we'll see if that's going to impact him as they go to Detroit next weekend. You know, catch fences and the concrete wall over there are always a scary part of it, and I heard, you know, what Chip Ganassi was saying, and I think it was Mike Hull was talking about that as well, but nasty, nasty stuff. So happy, and that's all you're thinking about. As soon as you hear the turn announcer screaming about the crash and you see the tail end of it on the video board and you see that Scott is upside down and then you hear the description, I'm always glad that I don't see these live, that I know they're relatively okay before we find out what actually happened.
Lots of tremendous winners today, none more so than Takuma Sato winning his first Indianapolis 500, first Japanese driver to ever win the Indy 500. But you can point to guys like Ed Jones and Max Chilton and even Fernando Alonso and what he was able to do all month long as a big winner. But frankly, it was also a big win for safety during the month of May, given what Sebastian Bourdais as well as Scott Dixon were able to go through, able to walk away from during the course of this month of May. You have heard from Ed Jones. You have heard from Elio Castroneves. You will eventually hear from the winner in Takuma Sato. The press conference takes place right in front of us, and we will bring that to you here as part of our post-race coverage. We are with you until 7 o'clock. We'll take this quick timeout. More with myself, Kevin Lee, and the historian of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and Donald Davidson joins us as well. It's post-race coverage from the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race, and you're listening on 107.5 FM, 1070 The Fan, and, of course, 93 WIBC. You're also listening to today's broadcast on WIBC HD2 and WFNI, our trimalcast of race day coverage on 93 WIBC, 107.5 FM, and 1070 The Fan. Greg Rakestraw, Kevin Lee, we'll get to the track historian in Donald Davidson coming up in just a matter of moments. We, of course, have an interactive broadcast. You can dial us up. The phone lines are open at 317-239-9393. You can also tweet to us at Greg Rakestraw or at Kevin Lee 23. Takuma Sato is the winner of the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. Elio Castroneves, now a runner-up for a third time in his career. Runner-up's teammate Gilles Defferrin back in 2003 when he was going for three in a row. Runner-up 3 years ago to Ryan Hunter-Reay in 2014. Both Michael Andretti and Takuma Sato are approaching the podium. Let's get this quick check of traffic. We'll come back and hear from both the winning owner and winner's press conference taking place as we speak. Let's take you there now. Both Takuma Sato and Michael Andretti at the podium.
Move, because that put him, gave him the track position of the top two guys in front of him, and that was one of the moves of the race, in my opinion. And when I saw that, I'm like, whoa, I think we're going to win this thing, you know. And then he didn't let us down. He drove very, very well. I'm just so proud of everybody on this team. You know, it's the difficult part of having multiple cars is, you know, not everybody's going to be happy, you know. And there's some other cars that were very, very strong today that we had that ran into bad luck, and I feel really bad for them. But you know, that's why we have six bullets in the gun, and you know, he came through for us. You know, Taco did an awesome job, and I'm so happy for him. And I'm really happy for Honda. You know, they've worked really hard to get us here, and I know how big this news is. They wake up in Japan. It's going to be huge, and I'm really happy for them that we were able to give them a win with our Japanese driver here.
Thank you.
This is one for Michael and one for Takuma. Michael, you're beginning to catch up with Roger Penske now. I know that was a big goal of yours. But back in October or November when you signed him, I remember asking you, I said, now he has a team that can properly give him the right tools. And you always said it's easier to take a fast guy and slow him down than a slow guy and make him go faster. What have you seen in the development of Takuma this year since he joined your team? And then I have one for Takuma.
Takuma brought a lot to our team. You know, he's got a ton of experience. He's very technical. And on top of it, he's a great guy. So he's just a great part of the team. And he's done everything that I thought he was going to do. And I knew he was going to be fast here. And he definitely didn't let us down. He didn't let us down in qualifying. He definitely didn't let us down in a race. And I'm very proud of that. I'm so happy to have him on our team.
In Takuma, when we used to go over to Motegi, you were treated like a rock star over there by the fans. You know, and I asked you earlier in the week if you're as big as Ichiro, but how big will this be received in your home country?
This will be mega big. I mean, I cannot imagine how it's going to be. Obviously, the Motegi time, it was in Japan. You know, it was a very, very good race, I thought, and the fans very appreciate for the... And for me, it's just personally, in a home race, is always something special. But nowadays, a lot of Japanese, the fans following IndyCar Series, and particularly for the Indy 500, I know they're flying over from Japan today. Many, many people came. So I'm really proud of... what we achieved, and team gave a superb opportunity, and we showed the final great result today, so I'm very pleased about it.
Over here for Takuma, right here. Thank you. First off, congrats on your win.
Thank you.
Elio was just in here, and he said when you made that final pass that you had a Honda, he had a Chevy. Chevys have struggled all week. He said that he didn't think he had enough horsepower. So on the flip side of that, when you did make that pass, knowing that you had a Honda, did you think that, you know, those last couple laps that he wasn't going to be able to challenge? And also just given the fact that two other teammates of yours.
Sure, I think Honda as a package, they did a great job. And we already showing us some great performance from last year, but this year kept on going. And I know the Penske is particularly strong in traffic. They are coming under the gearbox. So once get tow and once I leading, I'm sure they can pass as well, which was the case today too. But like Michael said, 10 laps to go, I overtook them from outside, and that's really made me set a good position. And I know Helio is coming in the last three laps. He tried to attempt, but I just got to believe myself and got to believe what the car capable is. And indeed, you know, come off beautifully. So I'm very appreciative for that.
To come up, follow up on the Japan thing, like a lot of people, we've been to the races in Japan. We've seen you almost carried from sponsor commitment to sponsor commitment. How soon do you have to get back over there? I'm presuming they want you in country quickly.
Well, I mean, talking about sponsor, I mean, today the Rufo home mortgage and Panasonic and Honda, Firestone, everyone was a great support. And I always think that it's Japan was suffering since obviously 2011, big earthquake, and I know all over the world many people are suffering from the that kind of stuff, but still 250,000 people living in temporary house, and certainly this one is gives some energy, and with the Japan program still getting stronger, and any sponsorship is welcome to helping the children and the family over there. So I keep on going what we're doing, and the racing is the one part that I just passionately wanted to do it, and all the sponsors supporting on that program. So I cannot thank enough to them too.
When do you think you'll go back?
I don't know. It's going to be crazy. I mean, at the Long Beach 2013, I went back to Japan and did a press conference, and there was close to 300, the media was on the Honda first floor, and the fans really, it was crazy good in a positive way. So this one is even bigger, and this is like the best win in my life at this moment. So I just cannot still believe it.
Ziggy, real quick for you. Did you guys make any adjustments to the car all day? I mean, it didn't seem like you guys were in much of a panic mode at all.
No, the car was good all day. Garrett did a great job there, and we were confident on carb day with the car. We adjusted there, and it went. Taku wasn't happy with the car. We went back on it, and today was very minor. So a little one click of wing and a little bit on tire pressures, but really the car was underneath them all day and was very good.
Yes, Michael, on your left, congratulations. One for Ziggy. Well, getting back to numbers, as an active owner now, you've surpassed Chip Ganassi, and I was wondering how much do you pay attention and plans for the future? And for Ziggy, how many championships have you got here?
Well, Michael's given me a few of them, so we're good. No, I think I was with Al Jr. when he won, and so I think this is number three or four for me. So I've been blessed to have good teams and good drivers that make my job easy. So today was special just because this is one for the little guys. So.
As I was going to say, I feel tall up here right now. So it's really a pretty good feeling.
And again, though, being second, you know, in the big three, now you're in the big two.
That's awesome. You know, I somebody said that to me when we were down in Victory Lane. I'm like, whoa, that's a big deal, you know, because obviously I could never win it as a driver. And, you know, I think I said this a few years ago that, well, maybe I was meant to win it a ton of times as an owner. And, you know, maybe when I'm 80 years old, hopefully I'll have more wins than Roger. So, you know, that's our goal.
He's got an advantage out of four.
White flag is in the hands of Paul Blevins. He waves it. Takuma Sato leads Elio Castroneves into turn number one.
2.5 miles to go, and Takuma Sato looks really strong.
He swings it out to the short chute. Elio Castroneves, about 4 or 5 car lengths. Jake, his last chance might be exiting turn two.
Five
8 years ago, Takuma Sato took his shot in turn number one. He did not make it. Dario Franchitti won that race. Takuma Sato now, three car lengths in front of Elio Castroneves at a turn number three.
Castroneves tries to make his move in the short chute down on the white line. Sato has the lead out of four.
Elio Castroneves pedaling for all it's worth. Twin checkers out. History will be made as Takuma Sato goes to victory lane. He wins the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. Takuma Sato was second, and Jones is third. Chilton and Kanaan round out the top five. What a win for Takuma Sato and Andretti Autosport.
Again, Mark Janes with the call, but of course all the great turn announcers as well from the IndyCar Radio Network. Jerry Baker in one, Nick Yeoman in two, Jake Query in three, Chris Denari in four. One of the guys that did a tremendous job in pit lane with us as well, that being Kevin Lee. He was flanked by Rob Howden, Michael Young, and Dave First today. Dave Wilson, a part of the broadcast. You heard some closing comments from Paul Page as well. And, of course, the track historian in Donald Davidson, who will join us in a matter of moments. One thing that's a bit different for us this year compared to years gone by is that the winner's press conference is literally taking place right in front of us. So with that, and since my voice tends to go through concrete and rebar, I'm not going to try to broadcast over that press conference. So with that, let's go back to Takuma Sato and Michael Andretti.
The guy you can go for really hard with respect, and I can trust him as well. On track, off-road, we got on really well. So having battle with him is always good. And given the circumstance, we had such a strong package, like Michael said. And when it was a new tire situation, so after the pit stop, everybody got fresh tire. The car, not necessarily the fastest, I would say, because everybody could go flat out and in traffic. And that time, I was really struggled. But after 20 laps, our degradation must be the one of the best. And the Garrett, who is my engineer, worked so specifically working for the consistent car, which I agree with. So we didn't have a super, super fast down the straight, but I think we had such a consistent car. Give me a confidence. Give me the moment when you need it, you can really commit it. That's how we win today.
Michael, you talked a little bit about the bullets, but specifically the engine trouble. We know Honda's had reliability problems. When those two went down, how much concern was there for you, for the guys you still had left, that their engines would hold out?
Well, you're obviously concerned, you know, but we sort of knew that, you know, you're going with the odds, and that, you know, when you do have six cars, you know, you're probably going to be, if there is a problem, we're going to have a few of them go down, and that's what happened. But, you know, I don't blame Honda at all. I think, you know, if anything, I blame all of us pushing Honda so hard. And you know, they have come to us and said, so we can give you a little less reliable engine, but it'll have more power. So we all, of course, said, let's go for the power. And, you know, and when we did that, obviously, you know, we know there's going to be some sad faces, and that's what happened.
Michael, for those of us who covered the 1991 Indy 500, our jaws dropped when you went to the outside of Rick Mears in turn one, and then he came back with the same move, because we'd never seen that before. Today's race, it seems like we were seeing that on practically every lap. How do you describe the nature of today's race and just how vastly different it is from when you drove here?
It was really crazy because, you know, when I was here, they had the apron, so the track was much wider, so it was a bit easier. Here they were doing it. I mean, they were running four wide into turn three. It was nuts. It was like, and they were, you know, basically pulling it off. It was just amazing. And then when he went into turn one, three abreast, I'm like, oh, no. And then it's like, whoa, what an awesome move. You know, it was just, but that's what you have to do because everybody's so close. It's the competition's so close. And, you know, you got to take risks if you want. It's a risk reward situation, you know. And so.
And then you've been a leading proponent of getting rid of the aero kit.
Yes. Because I think, you know, it's not just about this race. I think it's about all year. And, you know, I don't like that, you know, there's certain tracks where one kid has an advantage over another. And I just don't think that's good for our sport. I think everybody should be on equal ground. And I think it'll be much better for the fans that, you know, you have the Hondas and the Chevys on equal ground going at it at every racetrack. And it's not that way right now. And so that's why I'm for it.
Omedetou gozaimasu, Takuma.
Arigatou gozaimasu.
Last year, you mentioned me that the story is beginning in 1987 when your parents got the ticket and you went to Suzuka and you saw the race and Satoru Nakajima and Ayrton Senna was there. Would you put in words this transition and this old journey? What does it mean to become one of the greatest Japanese driver, and what was the most sacrifice?
I feel so lucky because I think everybody support. I know. I mean, I know when I was 10, my friend of my dad and the father took me to Suzuka back in 1987. You know, when I was 10, and look, the very first time I went to the track, first time to see any racing car, that was a Formula One. And, you know, it was a gorgeous day for me. It just got me. And then since then, I was just crazy about motor racing. I just loved the car as a boy. But since then, as I said, I just didn't have any environment or anyone could give it the chance until 19 and 20 years old. But when I asked my parents, give me a chance, because the school had the age restriction. You have to be under 20 years old. So when I saw it, I was 19. So following year, to meet the last chance as the first time, a first chance to go there. If I'm not good enough, by all means, you know, it's fair enough, I quit. But I just cannot stand without challenge it. I couldn't quit. So I was in university and doing bicycle racing quite seriously, but I was ready to quit everything. I just wanted to focus the racing. And eventually, the Suzuka Racing School got me the scholarship. And that's how we started. So I have to appreciate everyone who involved the supporting today is only because their support. You know, it's not me. I was really lucky.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's the voice of Pat Sullivan. That's a great job moderating all those press conferences. Greg Rakestraw, Kevin Lee, let's now welcome the historian of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in Donald Davidson. My friend, where do you want to begin talking about the historical significance of the 101st running of the Indy 500?
Well, Greg, there's so much stuff here. I've got a bunch of potpourri, so as I told Mark James, and I got a great deal more, I'll just keep popping these off until you tell me to stop talking. But, golly, the race never really settled down.
No.
And The different times where you looked at the monitor and you saw the first three or four and thought, going in, you never would have expected it. It was like Alexander Rossi last year on race morning or even into the early part of the race. You never would have thought of Rossi as a potential winner. And we had Max Chilton leading. We had James Davison ran second, and it wasn't pit stop shuffles. I mean, he was actually going for the win there with having started in 33rd place. So anyway, Takuma Sato, the first driver from Japan, of course, to win the race, but this was his eighth start. He'd never finished in the top 12. 13th was his previous finish. His birthday is January the 28th. That was the same as Jimmy Bryan's birthday in 1958. What does that mean? I don't know, but I love this stuff. And he drove in the Formula One Grand Prix. He was third in the 2004 running. And he led 17 laps, but the one that counted, and then Elio Castroneves, in contrast to Sato, with eight starts and never having previously finished in the top 12, this was his 18th start, and he has finished in the top 12 15 times.
Wow.
He's finished in the top 6 9 times. And in the top two, as you said, 6 times, with 3 firsts and 3 seconds, which is the equals the record of, well, it's not the record, but it does equal the record set down by Wilbur Shaw. In third place, we have the 10th Jones to drive in the Indianapolis 500. There have been 10 drivers by the name of Jones. Only 2 of those were related. That was Parnelli and PJ. He's the third different Jones to finish in the top 3. We had Parnelli Jones win in 63. Davy Jones was runner-up in 96, and now Ed Jones is third. The 3 Jones were not related. Ed Jones has a beard. How many times have we had somebody finish in the top 3 that had a beard? It's not a first, but it doesn't happen very often. And then Max Chilton. He led the most laps, 50 laps. Who would have guessed that going in? And just looking down a little bit further, Tony Kanaan, it was his eighth finish in the top six. He got fifth. Montoya, his fourth time, in the top five. And then for Michael Andretti, now has actually tied second place with his fifth victory. But some very interesting combinations of car ownership in some of the past ones. But he's, nevertheless, he's been connected with the winning team five times, which ties Lou Moore and then Chip Ganassi. But they've got to go a way to go to catch Roger Penske with the 16. In terms of starting position, Sato started fourth. That's the best starting position for a winner since 2010, when Dan Weldon actually was the last person to start on the front row. Now, the time was when typically the winner would come from the front two rows. And I remember when Bobby Rahal won in 86, exactly half of the winners had started from in the first four positions. So we've had, golly, since Weldon, the winners came from 6th, 16th, 12th, 19th, 15th, 11th, and now finally 4th. And then the winning crew chief, Siggy Harkus, I think he said this was his fourth victory. He lives in Speedway. So anyway, we could probably dig up a few more things here, but just a very, very interesting race. Never a shortage of useless information.
Oh, that's much more than useful. Not useless, no doubt about that. All right, folks, phone lines are open. Dial us up now, 317-239-9393. Hit us up on Twitter, at KevinLee23, at Greg Rakestraw. We are with you until 7 o'clock. Right now, let's go back to the WIBC News Center, the latest in traffic. Here's Matt Baer. That, my friends, is the Japanese television call.
You know, I'm not sure that it is.
Is it radio?
I found that on Twitter, and as I listen to the background, I found that on Jeff Gluck's Twitter page that was retweeted someone else. But you can hear the ABC broadcast in the background, so I think that might just be some Japanese fans watching the American television broadcast.
Oh, okay.
So we still have the Japanese official broadcast to look forward to that I'm sure will be coming up on Twitter very soon.
Because it is kind of the stuff of urban legends. We welcome you back to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Greg Rakestraw, Kevin Lee, Donald Davidson with you. 93 WIBC, 107.5 FM and 1070 The Fan. If you go back to 2012, and Donald did a great job of rattling off the previous finishes for Takuma Sato and never had a top 10 finish, that belies the fact that he was running second in 2012 and tried to make a pass on the last lap going into turn one. He and Dario Franchitti touch wheels. Takuma ends up in the wall. Dario soldiers on and wins his third, what would be his last, Indianapolis 500. And the best way to listen to the call of that race is to hear the Japanese call of the lap that, like, leads into it, and then what happens in the aftermath of the crash. So there will be fun with internet audio for the next several days, likely, based on what happened. We just heard over the last couple of segments, Kevin, from both Takuma and Michael, and as someone that covers those guys on a race-by-race basis, anything they said kind of stand out to you?
You know, it was interesting, Takuma talking about, and I don't know that a lot of us really know his background story. He's a quiet, shy guy, and I knew he was a high-level bicycle racer at one point, but getting started at 19 years old, that is very much out of the ordinary for anyone that's in motorsports these days. That's more like it used to be back in the day, but almost everyone that is racing in Formula One or IndyCar or NASCAR now started no later than 12 or 13 years old, and most started at 6 or 7. And just the other thing I would say about Takuma Sato, and again, fairly unknown to much of the American audience, to even the hardcore IndyCar fans, I think you're seeing how well he's liked within the IndyCar paddock, within the driver community. The report I did at the end of the race, That team has won before. Michael Andretti's team has won before, as Donald mentioned. No one's won the 500 more than Roger Penske. He's won it five times, and the celebration and the exuberance was genuine. You know, you saw the celebration when Rossi won and when Weldon won, because those were big surprises. Sato was in play all the way at the end, so this wasn't a massive, massive upset. I think it's probably because, yeah, it wasn't totally expected, but I also think that's a show of how much everyone in the paddock and within that team likes Takuma Sato and respects him.
What struck me in hearing Takuma talk about that first trip to Suzuka, I believe, the first autosport race he attended when he was in 87, and he said, when I'm 10 years old, and it's kind of clicked, I'm like, wait a minute, let me, you know, Donald would know this from memory. I go to Wikipedia to look certain stuff up. He turned 40 earlier this year, which these days is not that old for a race car driver, but Takuma doesn't strike you as a guy that's 40 years old. Yet when you think about it, he has been running either in Formula One in IndyCar since 2002. Mm-hmm. So his first full-time season in Formula One was with the Jordan Honda team. And as Donald mentioned, his lone podium in his F1 career happened here in the years of when the United States Grand Prix was a September race here in Indianapolis. And then after some seasons with the Super Aguri team, that didn't work out. It took about a year or two for him to work his way here to IndyCar Racing, his eighth season now in IndyCar, and as Donald noted, his eighth Indianapolis 500. In seven-plus seasons, he had one IndyCar win, very memorable one, Long Beach for A.J. Foyt Racing, early in the 2013 season. But I look at his points totals from his years in IndyCar, never higher than where he stands now going into this race, which was 10th.
Part of that is where he was at. No disrespect, but with the A.J. Foyt team the last few years, there was not an opportunity.
True.
You could every once in a while get a result like they did at Long Beach, but finishing high up in the points just, frankly, was not a possibility. He had more of an opportunity, but the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan team wasn't really rolling along at that time. KV, ups and downs, but he hasn't finished in beyond the top five, inside the top five, in almost 2 years.
Right.
And he wins the Indianapolis 500.
Well, first of all, I got to correct myself. Kevin Lee pointed out that I said it was Dan Weldon had the front row start in 2010. That was, of course, Dario Franchitti, so I stand corrected there. As far as Sato, some of the other fellows up in the network broadcast booth were suggesting off the air and after the race was over that Sato actually, by making that move on Franchitti, a lot of people didn't really know who Sato was or maybe really rate him, but when he made that move on Franchitti and then had the accident, got out of it okay, that added greatly to his popularity among the fans. And then the other thing too that you just said, I didn't realize, I used to do a thing on dates of birth and I used to rank them according to their age and everything, and I hadn't done that for a while. I didn't realize that he was 40 years old. So now I'm thinking, we've had 40-year-old winners, but how many people were 40 when they went for the first time?
Right.
And the only one I can think of at the moment is Lee Wallard, who was 40 in 1951. So I got to think about that a little bit more. And Kevin looks like he may have the answer.
No, I don't have the answer. I have another question for you to ponder that someone just sent me. Anyone shorter than Takuma? I'm going to see. I'm going to try to look up what his height is, but I'm going to say it's 5'6". Anyone shorter than 5'6"?
Dan, you've got to be very careful with this because I don't know that some of the drivers that are diminutive necessarily wanted it pointed out. But
so they didn't have it like the height and weight back in the day. He is listed at 5'4".
All right, then I would say he was the shortest because or the least tall, or however we're going to put that, because I think Mario probably had that record.
117 pounds is what he's listed at in the media guide.
He's 5'4".
That's what they're listing. I would have guessed 5'6", but this is the IMS media guide that I'm sure goes through his.
Well, then it must be right then.
Well, I'm sure that goes through. That's something that he or his team would submit, so they are approving that one. And here's the other factoid that I think is correct. I remember this coming up last year when it was either last year or the year before. Kanaan led last year, I think. Has he tied A.J. Foyt now for leading 13 500s?
Correct. Oh, that happened in this race, yes.
I think that's right.
Tony has had the lead in 13 out of the 16 500s he's been a part of, tying A.J. Foyt's record for having the lead in 13 different races.
What I had going in was the fact that among the people not running this year was Townsend Bell, which was really a surprise. And then Alex Tagliani, I thought, how many people have led the race 6 years in a row and then didn't have a ride? That's I think that's maybe a first.
And obviously 15 different race leaders, that is a new event record, surpassing the record of 14 that was set when Tony Kanaan won his only 500 to this point, that happening in 2013. Takuma Sato in 2012 had a moment. He had a moment in history, but didn't have a chance to win the race. Maybe the thought was perhaps he would not have that opportunity. Today he did. He did more than seize it. He becomes the first ever Japanese winner of the Indianapolis 500. We'll keep talking about it as we are here with you until 7 o'clock. Again, on Twitter, at KevinLee23, at Greg Rakestraw, or via the telephone lines at 317-239-9393. Now back to the latest in traffic. Once again, here's Matt Baer.
Over now to Takuma Sato, then five back to Max Chilton.
His last win came back in 2009, but Max Chilton's not going to make it easy. Now on the back, it's Sato trying to make the pass.
Sato goes side by side with Castro Neves to the high side of the start finish line.
Sato will duck back in now and jump right in behind the 8 machine of Chilton. Elio Castro Neves builds up that 3-2.
Change at the point with Sato taking the lead. Change for third as the rookie Ed Jones has cleared Max Chilton. It's Sato by 3 car lengths over Elio.
That Honda power that has backed Takuma Sato for so long now suddenly gives him the horsepower in the Indianapolis 500. Sato, Castro, and Evans working their way out of three.
Again, the voices of the IndyCar Radio Network calling the action through the turns in the late stages. The final pass for the lead. Takuma Sato will then hold off Elio Castro Neves to become the first Japanese-born driver to ever win the Indianapolis 500-mile race. Greg Rakestraw, Kevin Lee, track historian Donald Davidson, joining you now on 107.5 FM, 1070 The Fan, and of course 93 WIBC, and a tip of the cap to the meteorologists for saying that this rain was going to hold off towards the end of the day. The forecast seemingly changed every day for the last 7 days. By the time we got to this morning, the thought was, we think this is going to hold off till later in the day, and it absolutely did. And at 5:45, the heavens opened up here on the west side of Indianapolis, which is perfectly fine now since the race ended about an hour and 45 minutes ago. Are you doing some digging as far as oldest first-time winners? Takuma at 40 years and about 4 months of age. In fact, I think 40 years and 4 months to the day today. Or does that kind of stack him up with previous first-time winners?
Well, I'm embarrassed. The only one I could think of was Lee Waller. My hero, Sam Hanks, was 42. And so there's a total of five. In addition to Waller, who was 40, Eddie Cheever was also 40 on his first and only victory. Bill Holland in 1949 was 41. And then we've got two 42-year-olds, Sam Hanks and Emerson Fittipaldi.
That was my guess. I was just going to ask, how old was Emo? Because it had been, you know, a generation since he was a Formula One champion.
That is correct.
72 and 74?
Yes, very good.
So 17 years from his first Formula One championship when he won the 500. Yeah. Wow.
Again, rounding out the top five of today's race, and again, there's always unique storylines for each and every race. Elio Castro Neves, a runner-up now for a third time in his career. Rookie Ed Jones, in his sixth IndyCar Series start, has his best-ever finish of third. Fourth place, Max Chilton, in his 21 previous starts in the IndyCar Series, he had never finished better than seventh. He ends up leading 50 laps today, one of 15 different drivers to lead laps. Again, that is a new track record. You are listening as long as Mother Nature allows on 93 WIBC, 107.5 FM, and 1070 The Fan. The official legal ID being WIBC, WIBC HD2, and WFNI Indianapolis. Alongside Kevin Lee and track historian Donald Davidson, I am Greg Rakestraw. We talk about this in a couple of different various settings in terms of every race is unique. Every time you come to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is unique. I have been covering these races in some form or fashion since 2001 in the current facility that we are in, that being the Media Center high atop the fourth floor down the front straightaway of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I've never seen us lose power in here, and it's now happened twice in the span of the last 10 minutes. So hopefully we stay with you between now and 7 o'clock as the heavens have officially opened up and there is lightning in the area. The Speedway has been great about this for the last hour, telling people, hey, exit the grandstands and don't just go to your campers. Get in your cars because of incoming weather. And that is the case right now. This isn't 2004 where Buddy Rice had to celebrate his victory underneath Pagoda, and the late, great Tom Carnegie encouraged you to exit the facility because there was a tornado that was in the area. No such issues today, but clearly weather is a bit of an issue. We'll take a quick break coming up in about another minute or so, but something you mentioned off, and I'll make sure we bring it up in this setting here. I don't think we can talk enough about the great job that James Davison did today in piling a number 18 car.
That was really, really impressive. And he's been well regarded for many years. He is one of many drivers that it's just a matter of economics and budget. But when he was in Indy Lights, he was well thought of. He won a race, but just couldn't quite find the sponsorship to get a consistent opportunity at this level. And comes in, very late circumstances. That car, Davison said, he was told at the beginning, don't expect this to be as good of a car that Sebastian Bourdais had, because we've torn up two race cars and we're basically running out of parts. And the other thing is that you spend a few weeks, as they say, rubbing on it and polishing. What they're talking about, at least one example of that, is you actually have to physically put a race car together like a puzzle. It doesn't just come all in one big piece, and you take the cover off and put the engine in. They fit it together, and then you do everything you can to fit it as best you can, and you're trying to eliminate as much drag as possible. So millimeters of one section higher than another creates drag. So that's what they talk about. And, for example, one of the one-off efforts, if you went and looked at it this month, you saw a striking difference between that car with the gaps, the way it was pieced together, than from one of those that has been worked on and repaired for the last 2 or 3 months. So that's just an example of that. So impressive job by him. I haven't seen a replay yet of what happened in his incident. Whether that was him or not, I do not know. But certainly up to that point, James Davison was very impressive.
20th place finish belies the drive that he had. He led for two laps today, the two being equal to the same number of days he had in the car, Monday and Friday, before racing up from the 33rd position all the way to the front of the field at one point in time. We'll take this quick time out. Start working in your telephone calls as we continue with you until 7 on 107.5 FM, 1070 The Fan, and 93 WIBC. Back at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Greg Rakestraw, Kevin Lee, and Donald Davidson with you. Post-race coverage on 93 WIBC, 107.5 FM, and 1070 The Fan. Now, normally, I would leave it to save myself, the least race knowledgeable person of the three of us that are here, to bring this up. I'll give proper credit to the gentleman on my left and Donald Davidson. I'm glad you did. Let's go back to the start of the race. Jim Cornelissen was fantastic doing back just home again in Indiana.
Yeah. I had tears in my eyes then, and I had tears in my eyes just now when you described it the way that you did. That was just stirring. I can't think of another word right now. Just a fantastic job.
If you're a Chicago sports fan, there are certain names that are associated that aren't play-by-play guys or even players. But you think of Gene Honda as a PA voice, and maybe fans in this area might know him from his work of doing the Big Ten basketball tournaments here. Wayne Mesmer has done the anthem for years at Chicago Cubs games. Jim handles all of the national anthems for the Chicago Blackhawks. And if you're wondering about his tie to the state, he is a graduate of the Indiana University School of Music. That is his tie to the state of Indiana, and he was absolutely wonderful. Tremendous, and I hope that is a new tradition that we are starting. A tradition that has been the case around these parts for a long time, as long as it has been speed, especially as of late, has been of safety innovations. And, Kevin, we touched on this at the start of the show. I want to go back to it now. Last week's victory was Sebastian Bourdais, and as I look towards the front of the room to see him walk in here on crutches and give a press conference 8 days later after he said bluntly, there's not many guys that have survived a 227-mile-an-hour head-on crash. He goes, I did not have time to lift my foot off the accelerator when I hit the turn two wall. And then today, it is Scott Dixon surviving an accident that was beyond scary.
And I'm amazed, and I'll admit, shortly after, as soon as I saw that crash from Bourdais, one of the thoughts I had was, that's the end of a brilliant career. Not because we knew he was going to be okay at that point, but I just thought, well, I wouldn't be surprised if he says, or someone close to him encourages him to say, enough is enough. You've won 36 races, 4 championships, you've driven in Formula One, you have proven you can win against this crop of IndyCar drivers after dominating during the split in Champ Car. And Paul Tracy asked him, we talked to Sebastian on the phone on Friday afternoon, that was kind of his first real public comments other than press releases. And this is why Paul is a really good broadcaster, because he asked the question, and he comes from a position where he can ask. He said, you know what, it happens to a lot of people, and Paul said, it happened to me. I was in that Vegas race in 2011, and I decided I'd had enough. That was the mark, and that was his last race. It was Davey Hamilton's last race. I think it might have been somebody else's last race, Alex Lloyd, different circumstances for Alex.
Sure.
And he said, have you reached that point? And Sebastian said, no. No, and he's already talking about being back in the car by the end of this year. And maybe one of the reasons is because what you talked about. As horrific and frightening as that is, you're getting to a point you're never going to make it fully safe. But you don't walk away from those kind of crashes 10 years ago, from what Scott had or from what Sebastian had. So kudos to all of those involved. I pointed this out on the weekly show, but I know we have a different audience now. You can Google, if you're a casual fan, Marshall Pruitt's story on Racer.com from about a week and a half ago, where he went through 6 notable enhancements, often triggered by something bad, at least in some cases, that have really moved safety along in IndyCar racing.
And the other thing that I will point out, that so many people referenced Gordon Smiley's crash in 82 as being somewhat similar to what Sebastian Bourdais had, and the fact that Sebastian is likely or hopes to be racing at Sonoma at the end of this season, again, strikes me as absolutely, utterly remarkable. Let's get our first phone call out of the way because, he's been hanging on for a while. Derek has a question that I think either Kevin or Donald will be able to answer. Derek, thanks for dialing us up. You're on 93 WIBC, 107.5 FM and 1070 The Fan. Derek, you go right ahead. Now we'll try to get to Derek's telephone call in a matter of moments. So we're trying to get that worked. While we're trying to work that out, Donald, I wanted to make sure I had an opportunity, because I talked to you about this a couple of breaks ago. This is a monumental win for Takuma Sato.
Yeah.
This is a monumental win for the nation of Japan in terms of their passion for motorsport. But to now have a driver win at the Indianapolis 500, if you would, my friend, debrief me the history of Japanese drivers
all
here
right.
at IMS.
Well, there's been several, and I don't know if I've missed anybody or not. The first one was Hiromu Shusta. And he had 4 starts and got 10th in 1995. And then we had Hideshi Matsuda, who was a great little guy. And he had 2 top 10s. He was 8th in 96 and 10th in 97? I don't know. Tora Takagi, who was 5th in 2003. And I remember that one being a surprise at the time. And then there was Hideki Muto, who had a 7th place in 08. And then Shinji Nakano, who had 1 start. And that's the only ones that I can think of at the moment.
And let's point out one that's not. Roger Yasukawa was born in California,
yes.
Correct?
That is correct. Yes. And when you speak to him, he's an American.
Yep.
He's an American with a Japanese name of Japanese heritage.
And I think he was serving as one of his spotters. He has previous years. And I worked the parade yesterday for Channel 13 and NBCSN, and he was riding along with Taku in the parade.
Oh,
so
I know it.
I see him at some other races, some of the other oval races. I know at least in recent years he has often worked as a spotter for Sato.
And then there were several years where he sat just a row behind us and down a little bit.
That's right.
I'm not sure what the involvement was, but I would hang out with him a little bit back there.
All right, let me ask you this, because throughout Takuma's press conference, we heard references to when we would see you at Motegi, and you were such a popular figure, do you think that his win could actually lead this series to going back to Motegi at some point in time?
It's a thought I wondered about as well. It's at least something to think about. My guess is probably no. And some of the people at Honda could probably give us a better reason why we're still not there. That was Honda driven.
Of course.
Honda would decide if they want to go back. They've spent a lot of money in the IndyCar world on aero kits and engine competition and so forth, so they may not be quite as interested in that at this point. You know, I don't know if the Oval had some damage from the earthquake.
And
the last time IndyCar was there, we ran on the road course. I think the Oval is probably repaired, but I just don't know that for certain. But it is something to think about. Would you want to do that? I've not heard any conversations about that being on the radar. You're hearing internationally about China, about Mexico. There have been some other South American markets that have been mentioned. I've not heard any conversation about Japan anytime in the next couple of years, but it's something to think about, though, because he was mega there. I went there the last year, and he had a massive following everywhere he went.
If he was mega, he's mega yet again after winning this race, the Indianapolis 500. We'll take this quick timeout. We'll come back, and we will talk about the gentleman that we thought was going to cause the largest international reaction to this race, and perhaps he still did. That being Fernando Alonso. That and more of your telephone calls when we come back. It's Greg Rakestraw. It's Donald Davidson. It's Kevin Lee. It's 107.5 FM, 1070 The Fan, and 93 WIBC. Many thanks to Ethan Hatcher back in the 93 WIBC studios. The brains of the operation is Scotty Johnston. He is our on-site producer. Alongside Donald Davidson and Kevin Lee, Greg Rakestraw with you. We are with you until 7 o'clock on 93 WIBC, 107.5 FM, and 1070 The Fan. We'll get to more of your telephone calls coming up in just a little bit, 317-239-9393. We always get to you on Twitter as well. And from Speed Freak Bash, I have to share this. Donald Davidson mentioned Takuma Sato's birthday is January 28th. He didn't mention it is also his own birthday.
Yes, thank you. I'm not telling you what year.
January 28th is absolutely perfectly fine. All right, so Takuma Sato makes international waves by winning the Indianapolis 500. But so did the guy who did not win, but looked like, other than an engine that gave out late, had both the car, the team, and the ability to give it a go here in his first ever oval track race, his first ever IndyCar race. I'll start with you, Kevin, and Donald, I'll get your thoughts after that. Just your thoughts on the month that was for Fernando Alonso.
Well, he did everything that could have been asked for him on and off the track. He conquered a new style of racing, a new car, and dealt with what is asked of an IndyCar driver outside of the car and begged off of nothing. He did everything that was asked of him. It was really enjoyable to watch him go through this experience. It was fantastic, I think, for IndyCar in exposure. I think it was really good for Formula One in America. That is a mandate by the new owners, Liberty Media. They want to grow this sport in America, and what better way than put one of your drivers who had no chance to compete in the race that they had this weekend in Monaco, put him over here. 6 million people are watching, and because of the things I just mentioned, he's a very likable fellow. I cannot imagine how many fans, myself now included, when I already watch Formula One races, but I'm going to root for Fernando Alonso. I'm probably not going to be rooting for Lewis Hamilton.
No, I want to
see Alonso do well when he goes back to Formula One. Could he have won the race? Yes, he could have. He was going to be one of those, and clearly the Hondas just had more juice. Would he have won? I don't know, but he would have been one of the two or three that would have had a chance at the very end.
Allow me to double back to something you said, I think, on Thursday night's edition of Trackside, where you said, I'm only half joking about this. I think he's done more media the last 3 weeks than he's done the last 10 years.
I think it's probably true. He's probably done a lot of corporate functions, not media functions, meet and greets type things. I think that's more asked of him, but I think it's probably accurate that he's done more in the last 3 weeks than he's done, if not 10 years, certainly in 5 years.
Your thoughts on the Fernando Alonso debut trip to Indianapolis?
I thought it was fantastic for the event. I think it's a win for everybody. I was totally taken by surprise when it was announced. I learned about it on Channel 6 News at 6:45 one morning, and I thought, I hadn't even heard rumors about that. And I told my wife, I said, you've never heard of this guy, but I'm telling you, this is going to be huge. And I thought it would be just fantastic because the amount of attention it would get. I think it was great because here's an opportunity of where somebody wanted to do it, and was given the opportunity. He didn't have to wait until he was out of Formula One and didn't have a ride anymore. Then he would come, which some of the others had to wait to do. He wanted to do it, and he took it seriously. He didn't take it lightly at all. He came, he practiced, he listened to all of the people. And I was not surprised at all. I was surprised that he blew up, actually, or whatever happened. I did think that he would be a contender, and I could have seen him finishing easily in the top three.
Do you see him running this next year? Do you see potentially McLaren running a full-time IndyCar team or program next year?
Those are great questions, and it's going to be fun to speculate and guess on that, like on our Tuesday night radio show throughout the summer. Many circumstances involved. First, for Alonso, it depends on what opportunities he has in Formula One. He was very blunt recently when he said, I'm a free agent. I will make my decision in September, October, probably more like October. And if it looks like McLaren and Honda can be competitive next year, I will consider re-signing with them. But if I cannot run up at the front and feel like, and it's always a guess, but if it doesn't look like we've made enough progress to where I can compete for a championship, I will not re-sign with him. Then I will look for another winning opportunity in Formula One. But there may not be one available. Right. It is still possible. I wouldn't say it's likely. I think it's still a long shot. But it is possible that he is running full-time in IndyCar next year because he may decide that I really want to win the Indy 500, and I'll have a better chance to do that if I'm running in all of the races. Now, the argument to that could be, well, he could have won the thing this year if the engine would have lasted, and that's the only race. So that's why I still think it's unlikely. But it just depends on what he wants to do. I think he'd probably ask, do we do that much media every weekend? And no, they don't. No, they don't. This is a special circumstance. I think to the answer, will he be back? If he is in a Formula One winning ride, no, he will not be back next year. Then it will have to wait until he's done. But he's 35 years old. It's year to year in Formula One, so he's just jump-started the process, and he even spoke about, I'll be better prepared the next time around. So we will see him again. It just might be 2 or 3 years.
Let's try the phone calls again, and Ethan, I'm going to try the caller. I think he called back. Let's try Derek's telephone call on line one. Derek, fire away with your question or comment for Donald and or Kevin Lee.
Okay, I just wanted to know when the last time the race was red flag and how many times it might have been red flag.
Hey, oh, Derek, all right. Thank you.
As far as for an accident, 2014, when Townsend Bell had an accident, it was red flagged. And I think the thinking at that time was that we could keep running, but we'll be running under yellow and we will get to the checkered flag. Let's stop it right now, and then we can race to the checkered flag. And that seemed to be very, very popular with the fans. So going back before that, I found some other stoppages, but it was always because of rain. And we had two of them in 2007 during the race and then calling it short. And then the same thing happened in 04. And then in 97, actually the race was delayed a day, started, ran 15 laps, and then stopped because of rain. As far as an accident, I thought that had happened, but I've gone back and cheated a little bit, but I didn't go all the way. And then this one is sort of like a gray area. In 1982, coming down for the start, there was an accident, but then had the green bean shown or not, and I'm not sure that, I think it was about to be.
The phrase, damn Coogan, comes to mind
for
some reason.
Yes, poor Kevin Coogan.
I know.
Well, never mind.
Never mind. Don't say I will.
But as far as it to actually be stopped because of an accident, I mean, 64.
That was the first time, right?
First time.
Yeah.
And then 66 at the start. And then four accidents. Then 73, the Swede Savage accident. And I'm hard pressed to think of another one.
And again, for those, I'm so used to having I've got the race out in front of me on television, so I can see it. But clearly, if you're listening in Indianapolis, you haven't had that luxury yet. So unless you were sitting in the south chute between turns one and turns two, you maybe didn't have a good look at this. But part of the reason why we had a 19-minute red flag in this race was for safety reasons. It wasn't just for picking up debris off of the track. We literally had to repair the catch fence that goes over
what is the tunnel that goes under the South Shoot between turns 1 and 2, because that is where Scott Dixon's car made contact with the catch fence and ripped a chunk of it off. That's part of the reason why we were parked for nearly 20 minutes.
And then I also, as I go back through Twitter a little bit, I see a lot of people are asking for a red flag again on the major crash that happened with, what, 17 laps? What
17 was, laps.
17 laps yeah. left, because there was fear that they wouldn't be able to get it going, but they that cleanup was really quick.
None of those cars there was debris there, but none of those were as significantly damaged.
Yeah.
Again, in terms of Dixon's crash, it was a safety incident. By the way, the five cars involved in that crash, Newgarden, Davison, Serbia, Hinchcliffe, and Power. And at the end of the race, we had 19 cars running.
Yeah.
And that's not exactly a phrase we're used to kind of saying these days.
Well, now. Actually, Newgarden actually was, had he not done another lap,
right,
he would have finished behind the others. And they spent quite a bit of time, the Penske team, to get him back in. And he did one, he got out to finish the final lap quite slowly, but it was enough to move him up, what, five positions, I think.
Right. Doing a little points race. When was the last time we had this many cars done at the end of the
I
race?
I would have to, I hadn't gone back to do that, but it's been quite a while, because typically it's been like 27 and 28 cars running.
Right.
And for me, part of going back, part of it was the attrition. The race would take a lot longer. There would be a lot of attrition, and I'd keep a box score going from the bottom up, and then at the end of the race you would have like the 10, 11, 12 survivors. And so it's been quite a while since we've had as few as, what, 24 running, I think.
Again, 19 cars running at the end of this one. Fastest lap of the race belonged to the race winner. Takuma Sato turned a lap of 226.190 miles per hour on lap 150. But because of the amount of yellow flag time and cautions, our average speed, just 155.395 miles per hour. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to more telephone calls when we come back. We're with you for 30 more minutes. It's post-race coverage from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Takuma Sato, the winner of the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. More with Donald and Kevin when we come back on 93 WIBC, 107.5 FM and 1070 The Fan. Welcome back to Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Greg Rakestraw, Kevin Lee, Donald Davidson with you on 93 WIBC, 107.5 FM and 1070 The Fan. Again, we talked about this last segment. 19 cars running at the end of the race, and there was some concerns. I'll kind of let you, Kevin, handle kind of the timeline of it in terms of the reliability of the Honda engines, and we saw three of them let go today in Ryan Hunter-Reay, in Charlie Kimball, and, of course, Fernando Alonso. When did this kind of become a concern for the Honda teams?
All season. And the theory is, and I don't know if Honda's ever confirmed this or not, but just the idea behind it is, well, Chevy has had an advantage, and they had an aero kit advantage, especially on the road and street course races, not so much here. So what can you do to make up some of that difference and simply turn up the turbo a little bit? And there are things that are allowable, and I'm not a tech person to explain it very well, but you can turn it up and take more of a chance than it does at last. And that's one thing that they were pretty equal on, is on reliability. But we have seen more engines expiring this year before even you got to Indianapolis. But we've also seen more horsepower. Chevy drivers have been simply saying, we can't keep up with the Honda drivers. Now you come to Indianapolis, where they were on pretty even ground as far as the aero was concerned with the body kits. And then the Hondas just have more power. So the Chevy driver said, yeah, we know some are going to blow up, but not all 18 of them are going to blow up, and not all 8 or 9 of them have a chance to win. So I think they're probably still okay with that calculated risk, because if you don't have enough juice, you aren't going to catch Elio.
For as scary as Scott Dixon's crash was, he was checked, cleared from the infield medical center, again had a walking boot on his left foot, but we fully expect him to be driving in Detroit when the series returns to action on Saturday afternoon. One driver was taken to Methodist Hospital after his crash. That was Buddy Lazier. Do we have any sort of update on Buddy at this point?
We do not, and I had a couple of Twitter questions on that. So what I have in front of me is what IndyCar releases. I get things pretty much instantly when they have an update, and there's no update from them. I checked Buddy's Twitter account, which did post something an hour or so ago saying that he was taken for observation for complaining of chest pain. So no further information on Buddy Lazier. So hopefully the best for him, and then he's out of the hospital, if not by now, but by very soon.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines, and Ethan, we're going to go to line 5. Steve has a question about the BorgWarner Trophy. Steve, thanks for your phone call. Fire away.
Thanks for having me on the show, Donald. This is your old friend Steve from Ray Halls. And we left out Shuhei Hattori a little bit ago when we were talking about Japanese drivers. But I was wondering if you could discuss the BorgWarner Trophy a little bit. And we've been wondering all month in the garage area if the little fellow on top of the BorgWarner Trophy has a name.
Oh, no, he does not, or I've never heard of one. Quick history of the BorgWarner is that it was commissioned in 1935 when several companies came together in a business deal, BorgWarner being one of them, and I think that somehow or other what had been Wheeler Schebler Carburetor became part of that group. Anyway, the Wheeler Schebler Carburetor Company had put up a trophy, a gigantic trophy, as one of many prizes before they even knew they were going to have a 500. And when there was the 500, all of those special trophies were basically put on the back burner. And then in 1914, they decided to bring them out and give them anyway for different distances. And then the Wheeler Schebler became the prize for 400 miles, and that was won permanently in 1932, and rather than go into the details on that, the question came up, well, there's a number of awards and trophies for winning the 500, but there's no permanent trophy. And so this massive thing was commissioned from Gorham and Spalding, I think was the company in Chicago, and a bas relief sculpture of every winner up to that point that went up through 1935 was done, and they were all excellent. If you look at those, they're just really superb. And so it was unveiled at a dinner at the Waldorf Astoria in February of 1936, I think it was, and then presented in 1936, or at least when you say presented, the winner never got to take it home. What they gave them was a wooden plaque with a miniature Borg, and it wasn't even a half a Borg, it was about a third of a Borg, but it also was would be considered a bas-relief sculpture. Anyway, so the same sculpture for many years thereafter would put a new one, and it would be affixed, and then at some point, I think that gentleman retired, and then they had two or three different ones come in, and now they've had a permanent one for several years. And so anyway, the question was, when people would look at it and the thing is filling up and filling up, they say, well, what do you do when it's full? They say, well, Borg will get out of the racing and not do it anymore. Well, no such thing. What they did was they created a base. So in 1986, when Bobby Rahal won, that filled the final space. So a new base, or not a new, a base was put on the bottom. And then at that time, Tony Holman had been deceased for several years, and a bas relief sculpture of him in gold was put on. And then finally the base filled up, and now I was never clear as to whether they took the first base and extended it, or whether they started over again with a new base. But now I think it will go up through 2034, and every sculpture is different. So in other words, if you win for a second, third, fourth time, they don't say, oh, get out the Castroneves mold or get out the Foyt mold. They do a new one. And so it now I think it weighs 110 pounds with the base, and it's one of the most iconic trophies in all sports. I mean, I think it goes with the Stanley Cup and
that's the other one, that claret jug I would put up there too, absolutely.
Well, I think there's about four or five of them that are considered sort of like the big four or the big five or whatever.
And the BorgWarner is certainly part of that.
Yeah.
Again, as your phone calls are welcome, with you about 20 more minutes here on 93WIBC, 107.5 FM and 107 to the Fan. I know that while Donald's answering that question, you were kind of watching more of that Scott Dixon footage, courtesy of Twitter.
Yeah, I've had a good look at that. Coming down on that concrete wall on the outside, nearly The catch fence kept him in the ballpark, obviously, but catch fences are always very, very frightening, and there's a lot of luck involved. You come down almost on top of the cockpit on that concrete wall, bad, bad stuff. And then as he launched, Elio Castroneves somewhat went under him as well. So really, really scary stuff.
Elio just missed the first two accidents of the day. And yet, even though he had a car, as he talked about in the post-race press conference up here, that he felt was underpowered compared to Takuma Sato, this is a guy that started on the inside of row number 7. This was a remarkable month from Team Penske, at least from the 500 standpoint, in that we didn't talk about Team Penske all that much during the month of May. Yet here he was giving himself yet another chance to win this race.
And I think that needs to be noted, is that we thought maybe it might be different on race day for Team Penske, and you just can't count them out. And Will Power drove right to the front at the beginning from 9th to 2nd, and then after that he wasn't really a story. Maybe he could have gotten back into it before he was collected late. Simon Pagenaud never was a factor, never, I don't think, really in the top 10 legitimately. Joseph Newgarden was not able to work his way up. Montoya got close. He got close, not top 5 range, but probably, what, 8 to 10 range, something like that.
Didn't he get a penalty, I think, or am I mistaken on that? I know that he was up at the front, then dropped back.
And yeah.
Pagenaud did get to 8th.
Okay.
But never, for all intents and purposes, was never in the hunt. And that was a surprise to me.
Yeah.
I really thought that the four Penskes, who were not contenders in qualification at all, I really thought that they would march up through the pack.
So the point being that that's how good Elio Castroneves is, that the rest of the team wasn't, they didn't have it this year, whether it was just simply engine, whether it was set up. There were some other Chevys that were in the mix a little bit more than them, but Elio drove to the front, just not enough juice to be able to get it done, though.
By the way, for Elio, and nobody talks about the points until after you're done with the Indy 500. We're now done with the points. We are with the 500. We talk about the points. Elio, after today, finishing 2nd, his first in IndyCar Series points. He has not finished lower than 9th in any race this season, and now has been at least top 5 in his last 4.
And that's going to be a major story the rest of the year, because that's the thing. Elio Castroneves has been so good for so long. You know, we talk about the 3 runner-ups as far as the Indianapolis 500 is concerned, but, you know, I kind of put the points in the full season out of my mind, but it's like 4 times he's finished 2nd in the championship or something like that. He's come close so many times in the championship, and that's what double points plus qualifying points will do you. If you have a good Indianapolis 500, you've got a big jump in the championship.
And to that point, this is his 16th full season in the IndyCar Series. Of course, had time in Champ Car and Kart before making the jump to this event full-time and this series full-time in 2002. Only once has he finished outside of the top 6. Yet he's never won it. So if there are 2 continuous motivating factors for Elio at this stage of his career, getting that 4th 500, which he came close to doing this year, or getting that series championship. But also of note, Elio will go to Detroit, and it will be at least 3 years since he won his last race.
Yeah.
His last race win was the 2nd of the 2 race weekend in Detroit, June 1st, 2014. Be an over 3-year race winless drought that continues under Detroit for Elio going to next weekend.
So here I'm looking at my notes that I normally take around to other races. 11 times he's been 4th or better in the championship, and he has been 2nd 4 times. And one other IndyCar series note, there have been 6 races this season, 6 different winners.
Well, it's not surprising when you have 15 different drivers that lead this race today. That certainly pays off. We'll take this final timeout. We'll come back with some final thoughts on this month of May and the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. A second century of races at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway starts off with a Japanese driver winning for the first time in Takuma Sato. We're back to close it up next on 93 WIBC, 107.5 FM and 1070 The Fan. Final thank yous to close out our tremendous month of May coverage on 93 WIBC, 107.5 FM, and 1070 The Fan. My thanks to Ethan Hatcher, our producer for tonight's program. Scott Johnston, as per usual, a fantastic job being our on-site producer. Donald, you've got some thank yous to throw out as well.
I do. I just want to thank everybody for another great month, and everybody that was kind enough to call in, and all of the compliments that we've got. It's just, I hope we can keep doing this. We go back quite a way with 1070, and like to keep going.
The answer is yes.
Thank you.
And we'll do it again later this summer when we have our week-long series of specials for the Brickyard 400. As of now, the final July race date for the Brickyard 400, Monday, July 17th, the return of Donald Davidson to these airwaves for at least one more week. All right, Kevin, what else have we missed in our two-and-a-half-hour tour of all things Indy 500?
Just scrolling through Twitter again. Twitter is a wonderful tool because it gives you more eyes, everything going on. We were talking about Simon Pagenaud, and I wish I had the opportunity to get through everybody because you learn things as well. Simon Pagenaud tweeted that he had damage midway through, so that might explain why he wasn't able to be a real factor. And flat spot of the tires at one point, avoiding a last crash. On Buddy Lazier, someone heard our conversation, and Lindsay says that I just left the garage about 20 minutes ago and saw Buddy rolling through on a golf cart. So that's fantastic news on that front. For the race itself, amazing. Amazing. Thankfully, no injuries that we're aware of, no significant injuries. That's always wish number one. This race continues to be amazing since 2012 as far as the entertainment level. They were five wide at one point, heading into a corner. Backed out of it a little bit, but so much overtaking. It was genuine overtaking. It was, I think, harder to pass, yet we still had 35 lead changes in this event. You had so many possibilities that could win the race. Bad luck for a lot of people, but entertaining storylines. And a very popular champion. You can see that when A.J. Foyt went in to congratulate Sato, Dario Franchitti to greet him. Fun month, fun month. Thank you to everyone.
I want to thank the folks behind the scenes, and I've thanked Ethan and Scott already, but also thanks to guys like David Deering, who was alongside for Trackside for a good portion of the month and his passion for this race. Same goes for Tony Donahue, the folks in the engineering department, folks like Jake and Charlene and Skyler and Dave and Rick and all those good people that make these broadcasts possible. Your top 10 finishers in this race from 10 down, Carlos Munoz, Gabby Chavez, Marco Andretti, Alexander Rossi, Juan Pablo Montoya, Tony Kanaan, Max Chilton, Ed Jones, Elio Castroneves, and Takuma Sato. Takuma, a winner of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. Thank you for listening on WIBC and 1070 The Fan.
On race day, all 33 drivers in the Indianapolis 500 field will be speeding towards one shared goal to meet two Indiana dairy farmers at the end of the race.
Because those dairy farmers will be holding the main ingredient to the most iconic celebration in all of sports, the Victory Circle bottle of milk.
Three-time 500-mile race winner Louis Meyer launched the tradition back in the 1930s when he took the checkered flag and asked for a bottle of his favorite beverage, buttermilk. Many years, thousands of miles, and gallons of milk later, the beloved tradition continues, and milk is recognized around the globe as the symbol of victory at Indianapolis.
So raise your own glass of pure, ice-cold goodness on race day and every day, and enjoy the same thirst-quenching taste savored by the Indianapolis 500 champion. Great taste, plus 9 essential nutrients. Milk, undeniably dairy. It's worth the drive year after year.
But we got to start with racing.
Where else? The 101st running of the Indianapolis 500, where half a decade ago, today's winner lost out by that much. Today, he won by essentially, well, just that much. Here we go. Number 101, none of the pageantry of number 100, so a lot of the focus was honing in on the drivers and the cars. If there is such a thing as too much of a celebration, it did sort of temper it a bit last year. Crowd's not nearly as good for 101. They were hoping it'd be jam-packed. It really saw pockets of empty seats. Lap 53, not a single caution, but here we go. Jay Howard, contact, turns one and two, into the pole sitter, Scott Dixon, and that is Dixon's car, straight in and out, and tearing into pieces. He would walk away with a walking boot, left foot and ankle pain, but he continually said right after this happened when I was watching the race, this is just unfathomable to watch, that the safety measures helped. Take a look at this view inside the car.
When you hit Howard and the car launched in the air,
You know, what are you seeing? What are you thinking?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I think when you make those decisions, you know, of which way to go, you're hoping that the car, you know, I was hoping that Jay was going to stay against the wall, but obviously with the impact, it then started to turn down. But I'd already picked that, you know, that way to go, and there was nowhere else to try and avoid him. So I'm glad he's okay too. And it's just a wild ride, man. You just hold on.
It is our Dr. Jerry Punch with Dixon. It's amazing. He's all right. Race is red flagged for 15 minutes. Got to get the netting back up. There's a lot of yellows there, too, if you were watching the race today on ABC. Castroneves won this 8 years ago, most recently. Takuma Sato looking for his first win at Indy. And Castroneves, with 7 laps to go, takes the lead from Max Chilton, the Englishman. Next lap, Sato gets to the outside, the Japanese star, and passes Castroneves. I mentioned half decade ago, Sato lost on the final lap, edged by Dario Franchitti when he crashed on the final lap. Could he hold on, learn from those mistakes of a half decade ago? We'll find out. Here we go. Final lap. Sato needing to hold off Castroneves, opening up a gap. In the final turn, unbelievable emotion as he can sense he is about to win the 101st Indianapolis 500, and he lets it out. Already a national hero in Japan. Elio, you are oh so close. Kiss the bricks, sip the milk, do it all. Simply put, unbelievable and indescribable at the Indianapolis 500 for Sato.
Unbelievable feeling. Oh, I can't thank you to the whole team. Look at these guys. It was obviously a tough race, but Helio really drive fair, in really fair. So I can trust him. Again, really coming from outside, and a fantastic race. Hopefully, a crowd enjoyed it.
You went underneath a flying Scott Dixon in that crash. What did you think at that moment?
Well, when I saw the 77 going to the wall, I knew he would bounce back. I didn't think he would bounce back that hard with Scott, but I didn't think it would be so fast. So I jump in. I don't know how I hold on, but I guess the guy upstairs hold on.
It really was incredible down the stretch. Last lap drama. This guy Sato is nothing new. Better late than never. He was 33 when he was an Indy rookie in 2010. 40 oldest Indy 500 winner since 1998. Congratulations to him. We are back on SportsCenter. 7 years ago, Takuma Sato was an Indy rookie at the age of 33. Now at the age of 40, after a devastating near defeat 5 years ago on the final lap begins to him, the winner of the greatest spectacle in racing. And it is a pleasure to be joined by Takuma Sato, the winner of the 101st Indianapolis 500. First things first, take me through the final lap.
The final lap, I cannot even remember. But I remember the last 5 laps to go, the Helio was charging, and then 3 laps to go, we were side by side, and brushed me away about 2012 with Dario. But this time, you know, I'm pointing in the right direction, coming with Taiwan. And I just, you know, big thank you to everyone for support. Cross the line was just an unbelievable moment. It's just emotionally, it's unbelievable.
You were an Indy rookie back in 2010. At the age of 40, you have won the Indianapolis 500. What does that mean to you?
I don't know. It means a lot to me. Still, Elion and I was probably, two of us probably more than 80 years old, right? Crossing the line. But no, age isn't really the problem. I think physical terms, you have to train really hard, but everything is heart and mental. And talking about mental, 2011 in Japan, big earthquake, and still 250,000 people living outside of a temporary house. And this win is certainly a big sum of energy, and I want to transfer to everything to Japan. Thank you very much, everyone.
Indeed, you are a national hero there. Last thing, what was it like to kiss those bricks?
Tastes like lava. No, it's fantastic. I was dreaming about this. This is the best place to race with. Not just in a physical terms, it's just to look at the crowd, look at the atmosphere, look at the history, and the kissing on the brick. This is such a history moment to me, and this is unbelievable. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, obviously, kissing the bricks is one thing everybody knows about, but sipping that milk is another. What kind of milk did you douse?
Oh, Oh, milk was beautiful. I love the milk, and I love the milk. I had a 2% milk, which is perfectly chilled, and it's a great taste.
No question about it. I know you're married. You got a couple kids. You got to have that milk. You got to make sure that calcium is there for the young kids. He is the 71st man to win the greatest spectacle in racing. Takuma, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you.